Bob Lohfeld of the Lohfeld Consulting Group, writing about the challenging search for good procurement practices. Bob, it's great to talk to you again, as always. I was struck by one of the paragraphs at the beginning of your piece where you write, "Today I see little evidence that the government procurement market's converging on the best IT procurement practices." Does that mean we're converging on the worst IT procurement practices, or what's filling the vacuum? Thanks for coming on today, Bob.
Yeah, you're welcome, Francis. And I think it's a lack of convergence and more divergence. As we see, the government procurement strategy, it's moving in lots of different directions. And the quest was to find best procurement practices out here and replicate them. And that's what all the industry organizations wanted to see happen. But little evidence is out there that that's actually what's going on.
You write, instead, agencies appear to be adopting diverse strategies focusing on finding expedient, protest-resistant procurement solutions rather than focusing on enhancing mission outcomes. And that's part of the discussion that I think gets lost on folks, and partly might be my fault, when we talk about reform and procurement reform in particular. We forget about the idea that the point of it is to make something better, not just reform for reform's sake, Bob.
And it needs to be better for the three stakeholders involved in a procurement. And it's the government, the mission side of the government organization, it's the contract side, and it's all of the government contractors that participate in the government contracting market. All three parties need to benefit, and we seem to have gone without oversight in a direction that's really expedient for the procurement shop, and they're crafting new procurement strategies that are principally designed to be protest-proof. And I think they're losing sight of what that does to the stakeholders on the mission side and what it does to industry.
You write about some examples in this piece, and we have it linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The first example you cite is the GSA GWAC program. What do you see there that's causing you to maybe raise your eyebrows a little bit, Bob?
Well, what GSA has done with their most recent strategy on Alliant Large and Alliant Small, both procurements coming out here shortly, is that they have drifted off of what's a traditional best value strategy, where companies write a technical approach and write a management plan, and instead they've gone to what we call an attributes requirement or an attributes procurement, where GSA has developed a set of characteristics that the ideal company should have. And then they ask you to, as a bidder, to assess the credentials of your company against this hypothetical set of attributes. And the closer you match to it, the higher your evaluated score will be. And so that GSA is kind of protest-proof in this, they ask the bidders to do their own scoring. They give the bidders a scorecard, and you fill out your proposal, the characteristics, the evidence. You score yourself, and then GSA will take perhaps the top 40 large businesses, top 40 scores, and award a contract to them, assuming that once they validate your proposal that your attributes are real, you get a contract, and the top 80 small businesses, as it stands, will get a contract. So the better you match this hypothetical profile, the more likely you are to be successful. That's a very different procurement strategy than what we've seen in the past.
And you paint a pretty negative portrait of this, Bob. You write, if you compete on innovation and creativity, then these vehicles are not going to be to your liking. If you're one of the new boutique players in the IT market with limited government market experience, you have minimal chances of winning. And if you're a mid-tier contractor, you'll most likely score at the bottom of the large business pool, leaving you as one of the many runners-up in the large business competition. It feeds that perception of all or nothing for GWACs, too, I imagine.
It is, and I really have an issue with them, because they're great if you're inside. If you're a winner, they're marvelous. And if you're on the outside, it's a long, cold stretch before you can get back in. And what happens by creating this standard of what the hypothetical company should look like, it's built by interviewing lots of government people, and each one has their own likes and preferences, and you put them all together, and it's kind of like a committee developing a camel. If you're a great company but you don't have any cost-plus work, well, you lose points there. And if you haven't done international work, well, you lose points there. And if you haven't done contracts of a certain size and a certain scope, well, then you lose points there. And And what happens by applying that methodology is the boutique firms that, let's say, are really, really thought leaders in cloud computing will score very poorly in a procurement like this because they won't have that broad spread of government contract experience. The other group that gets absolutely squeezed are the mid-tier players, as the world is divided into two lots here. You've got small business and large business. And these great companies that sit with 500 employees, they're too big to be small, but they're at the small end of the large. So when they tally up their scores, it's highly likely that they're going to end up at the bottom of that large business pool, and they're going to be the ones that get regret letters here. So it becomes a bifurcated market with the smalls doing well and the really bigs doing well, and the middle market just kind of left out of the race.
Bob Lohfeld of the Lohfeld Consulting Group writing about the challenging search for good procurement practices. And that fits with the next example in your piece, Bob, and that is the idea of too many or too few winners. And we've heard about examples, plenty of them, where people believe there are too few winners. You cite, though, the Seaport E contract in 2008 that the Navy let and now has over 3,000 awardees. And I don't know the intricacies of how the Seaport E contract operates, but I would imagine, just as an amateur handicapper, that it's got to be complicated and maybe a little chaotic for all the companies that are trying to compete inside that vehicle.
So what happened here with Seaport E is they had rolling admissions. So we competed, and then basically every quarter new companies can come along, and if they meet the requirements, then they're also admitted to the procurement vehicle, and they become a contract winner. So proudly, we have 3,000 companies out here waiting to see a task request come their way. The companies that use Seaport E really well will secure a lot of business through it, and we're looking at maybe $38 or $40 billion worth of work flowing through Seaport E. The companies that were fledgling firms that came along and got on board with Seaport E, we'll never see a dollar of revenue. So here, we have kind of two fundamental questions: if 3,000 companies won, was there really a competition? And to me, that seems like a stretch. If everybody wins, I don't know that we had a competition. And if we didn't have a competition to down-select bidders, then why are we using this vehicle to sidestep all the other procurement rules that apply to full and open competitions? And we're seeing business that would have normally gone full and open sliding through these GWAC vehicles like Seaport E.
We just have a couple of minutes to go, and I want to cite one in particular of the examples that you use. You also write about too long or too short a performance period, on-ramps and off-ramps, task order size. But the one I want to spend a little bit of time with before we run out of time is the best value trade-off versus LPTA evaluation criteria. But this is one that just has people all over the contracting community, and especially in the DOD contracting community, still just going absolutely bananas, Bob.
It does. For the most part, the GWAC procurements recognize that they want to do a best value trade-off, and they're looking for companies with fair and reasonable prices, and they'll have the price competition at the task order level. Here on a procurement like Encore, they reversed the paradigm and said, let's go with an LPTA criteria to award the basic vehicle. So they set up a hurdle criteria that companies must meet, and the hurdle's not very high for firms in the business. And if you meet the hurdle, then all those companies clearing the hurdle, they'll look at their price proposal, and the 20 lowest priced offers will be candidates to receive a contract. And they validate that you did indeed clear the hurdle, you certify a few other things, and they review your proposal as being acceptable, and then you get a contract. So their strategy is clear the hurdle, and then the 20 cheapest companies will take over the support of DISA's IT infrastructure. And that's absolutely the antithesis of what they have today on Encore One. They've got some of the largest, best contractors in the market working there, and those contractors aren't arguably the cheapest brands in the market, but probably the better brands. So Encore stood LPTA on its head and is applying it at the vehicle level.
You ask a rhetorical question here that I'll direct to you as an actual question. You write, are they out of step with everyone else or marching in a new direction that others will follow? We'll have to wait and see. Which do you think is the case there, Bob?
I think they're totally out of step with everyone else, and they're operating in a direction that's contrary to the policies promulgated by Frank Kendall and his office in DoD acquisition. So I'm hoping somebody will rein them in and just say, hey, we were kidding about LPTA. We're going to go to a more traditional approach and try to get the best value players in here, not the cheapest players.